For 12,000 years, the Bedouin have survived where life was never meant to exist. Empires have risen and vanished into the sand, yet their breath still lingers beneath the sun. Jordan is a land of paradox, where silence keeps the memory of worlds the earth itself tried to forget. There are places on Earth that look as if they were never meant for us. Wadi Rum, in the southern heart of Jordan, is one of them, a vast red desert, carved not by hands, but by wind, heat, and time itself. For half a billion years, sand and granite have collided here in a slow, silent argument between creation and erosion. The cliffs rise nearly 400 meters sheer and impossibly smooth like fortresses built by light. Every color seems alive, ochre, crimson, rust shifting as the sun moves, as if the desert is repainting itself with every passing hour. The Bedouin call it the Valley of the Moon, and under the moon's silver wash, that name feels literal. The ground glows. Shadows turn blue. Even silence seems to hum. You don't walk through Wadi Rum, you drift through it. The sand pulls at your feet like water. Wind whispers across the dunes, carrying the smell of iron and stone. On some cliffs, you can still see the petroglyphs, hunting scenes, camels, mysterious symbols etched more than 12,000 years ago. They are the earliest conversations between human and landscape still visible on the same walls the wind continues to shape. Then there are the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, a natural fortress sculpted by the quiet patience of the earth. Seven colossal columns rise shoulder to shoulder, carved not by tools, but by the slow breath of wind and the relentless rhythm of time. At dawn, they shimmer like molten gold. By afternoon, they blaze into crimson fire, and when night comes, they fade into the starlight, dissolving back into the sky that once birthed them. Look closely, and you can read the story of an ancient sea written on their skin. The delicate veins and rippling strata that pattern the rock are remnants of the Cambrian Ocean, a world that existed nearly 500 million years ago, when this desert was once the floor of a living sea. Microscopic organisms once drifted here long before mountains had names or maps were drawn. Over ages, water became sand, sand became stone, and the stone, through heat and time, became this desert cathedral. And yet life never stopped returning. Now in the shadow of these same cliffs, another kind of survivor walks. The darkling beetle, small and unassuming, endures the 50 degrees heat by sealing its wings to keep moisture in and raising its body high above the burning sand. It drinks from nothing, creating water from the dryness of its food, a chemist of survival. Each step it takes across the cracked earth is a testament to persistence. Nearby, the Onaja, the wild ass of Arabia, moves with a quiet dignity across the plain. It can lose up to 30% of its body weight to dehydration and still endure, raising its body temperature to avoid sweating, a living paradox of strength and restraint. But the spirit of Wadi Rum is most evident in the Bedouin and their camels. With their turbans protecting them from the heat and their fur perfectly insulating, camels are not just a means of transport, but also a lifeline, a companion in the fight for survival. The Bedouin say the desert never forgets. Perhaps they're right. The ocean turned to stone, the stone to dust, and the dust learned how to breathe again. We come like whispers and disappear like wind, but they remain patient, silent, eternal, reminding us that time belongs more to stone than to man. Ah, Lawrence's Spring, a natural freshwater spring. A few miles away, Lawrence's Spring still trickles from the rock. It's hard to imagine water here, yet this clear pool sustained caravans for centuries. A secret vein of life, known only to those who listened to the land. Lawrence of Arabia rested here once, and he wrote of vast, echoing, godlike spaces. During the Arab Revolt of 1917, he crossed this desert with Bedouin allies, guided by stars and silence. Near Sheikh al-Tawaki, a faint carving of his face endures beneath it the words, Lawrence of Arabia, 1917. The desert keeps its heroes not in statues, but in sand and light. And above it all, the Burda Rock Bridge rises a perfect arc of stone, suspended 35 meters above the desert floor, connecting nothing but air and light. Locals call it the bridge between heaven and earth. Yet to those who have stood beneath it at dawn, it feels less like a bridge and more like a heartbeat. They say the wind remembers things here. The Bedouin whisper that the bridge was formed in one breath, when the sky bent down to kiss the earth and the stone froze that moment forever. Others believe it marks the path of ancient spirits. Crossing between worlds when the night is still enough to listen. Climbing toward it, you feel the silence thicken. The air cools, the sound of your own breathing merges with the wind's slow chant. Here, paradoxes are everywhere. A fortress meant to defend now surrenders to silence. A place built by men to last forever now belongs entirely to the wind. The air hums with ghosts, the memory of commands shouted across sand, now reduced to whispers carried by dust. Just beyond it, the land softens. The road fades into dunes that roll endlessly toward the horizon. As dusk descends, a faint orange glow spreads across the plain. You reach the campsite, a ring of tents beneath a sky so vast it feels like another ocean. In a desert, where life should have ended, an entire city was carved into the heart of a mountain. Not built with bricks, but sculpted from living rock, a civilization that turned silence into architecture. They called it Petra, the rose-red city capital of the Nabataean kingdom, more than 2,000 years ago. The first glimpse is a trick of the earth itself. You enter through the Sikh, a narrow canyon, barely wide enough for a camel to pass. Its walls twist and climb, blotting out the sun. The further you walk, the darker it grows, the cooler it gets, until the light suddenly explodes. The treasury Alkizne rises like a vision that shouldn't exist, 40 meters high, chiseled entirely by hand into a wall of rose-colored sandstone. This sudden revelation feels less like arrival and more like awakening. It is not a building. It is a sculpture the size of a cathedral carved from the mountain itself. From top to bottom, without mortar, without scaffolding, without forgiveness for mistakes. Every curve of its Corinthian columns, every Greek pediment, every carved deity was born from a single face of living rock. It is both Greek and Nabataean, foreign and familiar, an impossible marriage of empires that never truly met. And yet what the world calls the treasury was never meant to store gold. Some say it was the tomb of King Aretas IV, a ruler of the Nabataeans in the 1st century BCE. Others think it was a temple of celestial worship aligned with the rising sun on sacred days. No one truly knows. The purpose of its creation is still unwritten, a mystery, suspended between worship and memory. Step closer, and the facade transforms with every breath of sunlight. At dawn, it glows pale pink. At noon, it burns crimson, and by dusk, it fades into violet shadow, as though the stone remembers the sea it once was, 500 million years ago. A city for the living, built as a home for the dead. A kingdom born from sand, sustained by water. Above the city, the monastery Ad Dir rises from the rock, like something not built, but revealed. Forty-eight meters tall, it stands alone, vast and silent, gazing across the endless folds of sandstone. Where? The treasury dazzles with detail, the monastery overwhelms with scale. Its beauty is austere. No ornate carvings, no delicate friezes. Just pure geometry and strength. Two massive columns flank its doorway, and above them, a single urn crowns the facade, not decoration, but declaration. It feels less like architecture and more like the desert itself has decided to take human shape. Here, simplicity becomes grandeur. The lines are clean, the stone unadorned, and yet it breathes power, an elegance born from restraint. When the sun moves across the sky, the walls shift in color, pale gold at dawn, amber by noon, and at dusk, a deep burnished orange, as though the mountain is remembering the fire that once forged it. Hidden within the mountain's crimson heart, the royal tombs of Petra stand like silent monarchs, watching over the city of stone. Hewn directly into the cliff face, these grand facades, part temple, part palace, part grave glow with shades of rose and gold that shift with every breath of light. No one knows exactly who rests inside. Kings, queens, priests, or perhaps no one at all. The chambers are empty, the inscriptions lost. Yet the silence feels deliberate, as if the Nabataeans carved these tombs not merely for the dead, but to remind the living that even power turns to dust while beauty endures. For over 1,000 years, Petra slept beneath dust and myth. Wind was its only visitor. Bats and shadows were its keepers. A civilization that once ruled the trade of the ancient world became a ghost. And yet in its stillness, it endured, proving that sometimes disappearance is the purest form of survival. A short journey north lies little Petra, Sicalbarid, a ghostly echo of its greater twin. The cliffs here rise so high, they steal the sun, casting a pale eternal twilight over walls carved from soft faded sandstone. Centuries ago, this was no forgotten place, but a crossroads of the ancient world where caravans, heavy with silk gold and frankincense, pause to rest before entering Petra's heart. The smoke of their campfires still stains the ceilings. The air still hums with whispers of distant languages. Every chamber, every hollowed step seems to hold a memory of trade and laughter, of prayers spoken to unseen gods. There are places on Earth that look too perfect to be ruins. Places where silence feels rehearsed and the stones seem to be waiting for applause. Jerash, the Pompeii of the Middle East, is one of them. Once buried in dust for nearly 1,000 years, it was rediscovered by chance, an entire Roman city hidden beneath the hills of northern Jordan. You pass beneath the Arch of Hadrian, 3 stories, high carved for an emperor who never returned, and time begins to misbehave. The air feels heavier, as if it remembers. The marble road ahead, the Cardo Maximus still bears the deep grooves left by chariot wheels 2,000 years ago, each one a fossil of motion. You can almost hear the clatter of iron and the roar of crowds that no longer exist. To your left, the oval plaza opens like an ancient lung. Perfectly symmetrical, absurdly precise 56 Ionic columns encircling an empty space where life once unfolded. Priests once performed rituals here under a sky so bright it could blind. The South Theatre, with its 3,000 seats carved in tiers of stone, still carries a whisper perfectly from one end to the other, a feat of acoustics so precise that even modern engineers come to listen not just to sound, but to genius. And in spring, when the wild grass rises between the cracks, Jerash blooms again, green veins threading through white marble, a ruin that refuses to die. Travel north and the light changes. The sandstone fades to black basalt, and the hills rise toward the sky. What if the holiest map on earth wasn't drawn on paper, but on the floor of a forgotten church made from 2 million shards of stone? In the heart of Jordan lies Madaba, the city of mosaics where faith was once crafted by hand. Inside the humble St. George's Church, the world's oldest surviving map of the Holy Land lies underfoot, not framed, not guarded, but walked upon. Jerusalem, the Jordan River, Bethlehem, all rendered in tiny tesserae that still gleam after 15 centuries of earthquakes and empires. The paradox is haunting the most fragile art form ever made, outlived every kingdom it once portrayed. Each fragment is a heartbeat of devotion, broken yet eternal. To the west, the land rises into Mount Nebo, 817 meters above the valley, where Moses saw the promised land but was forbidden to enter it. From here, the horizon stretches so far that time itself feels thin. The Byzantine monastery at the summit lies in ruins, yet its mosaic floors still blaze with vines, gazelles, and angels. Images of paradise imagined by those who would never see it. There is something cruel and divine in that view, the mountain that reveals everything and gives you nothing. The wind here doesn't whisper, it mourns, carrying the echo of a promise that was never fulfilled. the Amun Citadel, where modern Jordan wraps around ancient bones. A modern capital buzzing with car horns, markets, and neon built directly on the foundations of civilizations long gone. You'd be surprised to learn that this hill has been destroyed and rebuilt almost 19 times, each layer a fallen empire, each stone a scar. On top of the highest hill, the ruins of empires remain the Temple of Hercules. On top are the remains of the Temple of Hercules, once the pride of the Roman world. It was built to honor the god of strength. A colossal 13-meter statue visible from every corner of the ancient city. Today the god is broken. Only two enormous fingers and part of an elbow remain rising from the ground like the final gesture of a forgotten deity. Nearby, the Umayyad palace rises like a mirage, a sprawling ruined complex covered by a reconstructed dome. Once, it echoed with the footsteps of caliphs and the rustle of silk-clad courtiers. Yet, as the sun sets and the call to prayer echoes from the valley below, the ruins seem to awaken ancient stones carrying the rhythm of a living city. Each of these places holds a contradiction, too perfect to ignore. There are places on Earth where nature seems to rebel against its own laws, where death breathes life, where silence moves, and where the impossible becomes ordinary. You'll be shocked to know that in the lowest place on Earth, the Dead Sea, 430 meters below the rest of the planet life, refuses to die. Its water, 34% salt, is so dense that you cannot sink, even if you try. The experience of floating there feels almost supernatural, as if gravity itself has given up. And yet this sea is shrinking by nearly 2 meters every year, its edges cracking open to reveal sinkholes and salt pillars that look like sculptures of despair. But beneath the surface, where no fish should swim, scientists have found the unthinkable colonies of extremophiles, microscopic organisms thriving near hot springs 30 meters deep. In the very womb of death, life has found a way to whisper back, "The irony is painful. The Dead Sea is dying. And yet, it may hold the key to understanding survival itself." Where the desert turns to the river and silence roars like thunder. Wadi Mujib, dubbed the Grand Canyon of Jordan, is a scar of time and water, stretching 70 kilometers long and 1,200 meters deep. From the rim, Wadi Mujib looks like a wound on the vast desert, jagged and raw. The cliffs stand like walls of fire, painted in shifting shades of red, yellow and amber, their colors changing with every movement of the sun. But descend inside, and everything changes. The air grows cool, shadows lengthen, and suddenly the desert vanishes, replaced by a world of water. Streams wind around boulders, waterfalls thunder down narrow canyons, and echoes bounce endlessly between the rock walls. The driest land in the region guards one of the Middle East's wildest rivers. Yet, life thrives here. Ibex, the legendary mountain goats, leap across impossibly steep cliffs. Hyenas and foxes prowl the plateaus. Above and over, 150 bird species glide on. In a land ruled by desert water is rebellion. It burns at heels. It glows beneath the sand, as if refusing extinction. You'll be shocked to know that just 264 meters below sea level, in a place where everything should be cold and still the earth is boiling. At Marin Hot Springs, waterfalls of mineral-rich water crash from the cliffs at temperatures reaching 63 degrees. Turning a canyon of stone into a living furnace, steam curls through the dry air like the breath of something ancient. The Romans once came here to heal their wounds, calling it the fire that cleanses. The Byzantines built stone baths and prayed to the mountain as if it were divine. Even now, the scent of sulfur lingers sharp and holy, a reminder that sometimes healing must come through pain. This is the paradox of Mayan comfort born from fire luxury hidden inside desolation. Head south, and the desert opens to an impossible horizon, Aqaba Jordan's only gateway to the sea. You'd never guess that a nation of white sand could guard one of Earth's most vibrant marine ecosystems. Yet here, under a blazing sun, the Red Sea sparkles with crystal clarity visibility, stretching 30 meters, as if you're looking through time itself. Coral gardens bloom in vibrant hues, pinks, yellows, turquoises untainted by pollution, preserved by isolation. Over 150 species of coral and 500 species of fish create a kaleidoscope of motion. Hawksbill turtles drift like slow relics, and Napoleon wrasse patrol the reefs like armored sentinels. The irony: a desert nation guards an entire sea of life. What should be barren has become one of Earth's last pristine underwater sanctuaries. You will be surprised as you go deeper into the eastern desert, where the wind speaks only in sand. A room of color and imagination opens up. Qusair Amra is not a fortress, but an Umayyad bath and spa palace, an 8th century resort hidden in silence. Outside the desert is as dry as a knife blade, but inside the walls and ceilings bloom with frescoes of hunting music, dance, and life. Every detail is so vivid that you forget you are standing in a place with almost no water. What is even more amazing are the drawings carved on the ceiling, constellations, figures, animals, and symbols of power expressed with delicate brush strokes. It is a miniature observatory of the imagination, where the ancients looked out to the world to find invisible order in chaos. The layers of paint still breathe with indigo, crimson, lavender, shimmering in the light, slanting through the narrow window. Every crack in the wall is a fingerprint of history, every drawing a confession of the past. Leaving Qusair Amra, where art tempers the heat of the desert, the road leads south to Kerak, where stone becomes power. No more frescoes or music, just walls as thick as oaths and dark, damp corridors hiding the memories of centuries. Kerak Castle is the tip of the Moab Mountains, a crusader fortress built to control a vital trade route, and it has done just that. The overwhelming thing is not the size, but the density of fear still embedded in the stone. The narrow loopholes like suspicious pupils, the spiral staircases that swallow the light, the long storage vaults that seem to have no end. Every stone of Kerak bears stubborn witness. The fortress once built for battle now stands silent, and its beauty lies in what has fallen rather than what remains. Dana, a place that will confuse you for another reason, it is where the desert learns to be green. Nestled in south-central Jordan, Dana Biosphere Reserve is the country's largest biosphere reserve, where the terrain changes abruptly like different chapters of the same book. Valleys filled with vegetation, then disappearing into arid, rocky desert. The landscape here seems to be debating what life really is. On the mountainside, the ancient village of Dana lies silent, a legacy of Ottoman times, where stone and wood have remained unchanged for hundreds of years. Smoke from stoves wafts through the mud-roofed houses, the cries of sheep echo in the air, and narrow stone paths lead to the edge of the cliffs, offering panoramic views of the valley, a scene that is both peaceful and a little bit wild, enchanting. As as you venture deeper into the Rumana Valley, where towering sandstone cliffs reflect the setting sun, things become surreal. The light shifts from pale gold to burnt orange, then to a fiery red, making the entire landscape seem to be on fire in silence. Here, dawn is not just the start of a new day, but the rebirth of the world. But perhaps what makes Dana most memorable is the feeling you get from hiking the ancient trails. Every step is a conversation with the earth. The air smells of grass stone and salt light filters through the cliffs, and you occasionally come across the remains of archaeological ruins, evidence that people once chose to live in the midst of nature's most challenging landscape, not avoid it. Shoved atop Jabal, off Ajlun Castle, is more than just a military structure. It is a symbol of resilience and peace all in one. Built by Saladin's general Usama in the 12th century to protect Muslim lands from the Crusades, the fortress now stands silently amidst a landscape that leaves everyone in awe. Unlike the arid, windy landscape of Kerak, Ajlun is surrounded by a green sea of pine oak and olive trees, where the fresh air and the smell of tree resin blend with the scent of moist soil. From the ancient stone walls, the view opens up endlessly rolling hills, olive groves like green waves rising in the sun. A living testament to how time turns battlefields into memories and memories into beauty. On a hilltop in northern Jordan, Umm Qais, ancient Gadara lies silently like a dark inscription in history, a Roman city built of darkness. When you arrive here, it is not ruins, but absolute blackness. The walls, streets, and theater are all built from basalt, a stone born of fire. Every stone here was once lava, once boiling, once burning. Now they stand motionless, inert, as if time has cooled, but still breathes the breath of ancient fire. A journey through Jordan reveals that this is not just a country of ancient relics and sprawling deserts. It is a living chronicle written in stone, sand, and light. Every ruin tells a story of resilience. Every valley breathes the rhythm of time. Jordan is not just seen, it is felt. And upon leaving, you will carry in your heart the echo of a land that never truly falls silent.